Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. Oh, the temperature's plummeting. We're getting into those winter months. And do you know why? I know that because, Matt, you delayed this podcast by about 5 minutes because you had to go make some hot cocoa.
Yeah, you know it's that time of the year now. I mean, I'm wearing a lovely cardigan as well. That, you know, I've gone cocoa mode.
I wanted to ask, is it like an American thing to say hot cocoa? Because I've never said hot cocoa. It's always just been hot chocolate to me.
Yeah, I say hot chocolate. You can't say cocoa. It's cocoa powder, right?
Yeah, I guess cocoa powder.
Yeah.
Just funks me up a little.
I can see you someone who loves a hot chocolate, Jesse.
I have had like three in the past week, to be fair. So
yeah, there we go. Well, Brad, do you go for the Cadbury's one or what are you going for?
I'm not actually sure.
Can you go and find it? Can you go to the kitchen now and find out for us?
Oh, you know what? It's Starbucks' own hot chocolate sort of thing that I think you can get like M&S or something.
What brand have you got, Matt?
I recommend the Options salted caramel.
They're quite good. Yeah.
Salted caramel one specifically. Listeners at home, this isn't sponsored by Options, but please do yourself a favor.
Just handy sachets. Or do you go for the big tub?
The big boy.
It's the big tub.
Big tub of it. Lovely. You love to hear it. Anyway, it's also getting cold because it's late October, and late October means Halloween, and Halloween means more horror stuff. I feel like we've been talking about horror stuff for about 3 weeks, but yeah, it's really coming to a head now because we're going to talk about a couple of things here.
We've got some highs and lows.
Exactly. Different ends of the horror spectrum, I think, here. Let's kick it off with the good one, shall we?
Yes, please.
Alan Wake 2. If you've listened to this podcast last few months, you probably tell I was quite excited for this game. Remedy are, in my eyes, they're my favourite developer. I wasn't saying they're best. Who knows? How can you define best? I don't know.
Would you say Remedy are the cure for bad games?
Exactly. And they never make one. That's the thing. I think I'm like an hour or two from the end of Alan Wake 2. It's quite a meaty game. I only got it a few days ago, but I'm like 13, 14 hours into it and still got a little bit to go. And I'm trying not to delve into hyperbole too much here, but it could be the best horror game ever made.
You described it as like, oh, it's the best survival horror since Silent Hill 2. And yeah. I just thought you were a wanker. I was like, there's no way.
No, I genuinely, it stands next to those. Like, it doesn't, if you put it next to them, I don't think you could be like, oh no, what are you talking about? That's rubbish. Whether it's, you know, Silent Hill 2 is still arguably the best or scariest horror game, and over 20, nearly 25 years old now? It's exceptional. And of course, Resident Evil 2, still brilliant. PT, do you define PT as a full game? Still one of the best horror games ever made.
It's a great experience, but I think what I really want to know, because I don't really...
Yeah.
I enjoyed Alan Wake, but it was never scary. It was never a scary experience.
No, and,
you know, comparing Alan Wake 2 to something, you know, as anxiety inducing as Silent Hill 2 can be, like how scary is it, at least from your experience?
It gets there. It gets me a couple of times. It's more just the sense of unease. So it's like Alan Wake 1 is, I think, a good game, but not great, mate. The gameplay just, it's dated now. It's been left well behind. And
I even
it was
remember,
never really...
At the time, I remember even thinking as well, like, it kind of just drags in sections where, like, the combat encounters go on a little bit too long every single time.
Exactly. It was still, Remedy was still stuck, I think, in a bit of their action kind of history with Max Payne and didn't really go full in with the horror of Alan Wake. Alan Wake's kind of a pulpy action horror game. It's kind of more like, you know, Resident Evil 4 is a horror, but it's not scary at all, is it? Let's be honest. Like, Alan Wake 2 is definitely more, it's looking at Silent Hill, I think, and going, we want to do that. And that's where I think it kind of, what they do so well is, like, it's got that psychological, like, horror tone and story, like, equal to Silent Hill 2, I think. It's got that survival horror action gameplay of, like, Resident Evil 2. And it's got that, like, pure just, like, jump scares and just general sense of constant unease that PT gave you. But I think, crucially, never once does it feel like it's ripping off any of those games. This is still thoroughly a Remedy game, and you can tell it's a Remedy game because no matter how tense it does get or scary or dark, there's always just that light relief. There's a weird character. There's just a funny note you're going to read. Like, you know how Resident Evil notes are kind of funny, but you're sometimes not sure if they're meant to be funny. Like, Itchy Scratchy, was that meant to be funny?
I mean,
I don't know.
Like, a lot of the time, at least in the earlier games, like poor translations or something really stupid where, like, I don't know, a guy in the lab coat says, we've just made the worst monster ever and we're going to keep it in our lab. And the next note is like, it's escaped, we're fucked.
Whereas like, you can tell these notes are very much like deliberately, they're talking about stupid, they're always talking about coffee and pie. That's where the Twin Peaks stuff comes into it all. But, and there's also just, you know, did you guys play Control? Or at least know of the Ashtray Maze level from Control, which is just this mad, like, musical action, like, voyage for like 5-10 minutes. They have a similar part in this game where, I'm not going to spoil it too much, but they do just go 15-20 minutes. What if we just made a musical? And it's so funny. It's just so good. That's all I'll say there. But
the genre, is it different depending on which character you're playing as? Like, are there any
slightly
switches?
There's still that general sense of unease throughout. But yeah, so Saga, who's the new protagonist in Alan Wake, if you don't know what the story, I'll set up Alan Wake 2 very briefly. In the first game, Alan Wake is a writer who goes to this town in the Pacific Northwest of America called Bright Falls because he's a writer who's hit major writer's block, and he goes to this town for a holiday, ends up basically going through this nightmare, things he writes come to life, and then at the end of that game, he's kind of lost in this dark place, which is this like alternative nightmare reality. So he's basically been
a dark place.
The Dark Place is what it's
much
called.
Much like Garth Marenghi.
Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, exactly. So for 13 years, Alan Wake's been missing. So we go back to present day, which is where Alan Wake 2 takes place, and Saga Anson, this FBI agent, comes to the town of Bright Falls to investigate these kind of cultist murders that are going on. So that's where the more detective side of the game comes in. So her parts of the game are very much rooted in that, like we said before, that true detective vibe, sort of LA noir crossed with Resident Evil of, you know, investigating a lot of clues. She has a case board. You're trying to work out the story of this game. But also there's sections where you're going through forests and really dark corridors and shooting like the Taken, which are zombie-like shadow enemies in the head. It's so good. It's just like, and it's not, the combat itself is solid. It feels, you know, similar to the Resident Evil remakes. It's very much that sort of gunplay, it feels like.
Yeah.
But it's more the anticipation of the combat that gets you. So you're never quite, you might go through minutes. Like, I'll let you know for a fact now, the first 45 minutes to an hour of this game, you don't even fire a gun. And that's where I don't want people to be put off by this game. If you play by the first hour and you're like, I feel like I'm just doing LA Noir a bit here. Because it does get definitely more action heavy. But there are...
But is it closer to that like true detective vibe where you just know something is in the background and it's off and it's just like, you know,
oh yeah,
some
it's
bad
constantly. Never once you like, everything here is okay. Like, you know, everything is great. Everyone's having a lovely time. Especially when you go and play as Alan Wake, who is stuck in this dark place, which kind of materializes itself as this nightmare version of New York. And it just looks, one thing I haven't said, this game looks absolutely stunning. Even I'm playing on console in performance mode to get 60 frames, it still looks incredible. And if anyone's seen the PC requirements for this game, you need a ridiculous machine to run this at full settings.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what that looks like.
What I want to know real quick is, because I played through the first Alan Wake and I remember certain bits and bobs and stuff and, you know, how it ends, but does the game sort of ease you into, if you have not played Alan Wake?
Yeah. Okay. It does. There's a recap and it does a great job the whole time of, like, there's notes and, like, people tell you of, like, what the story of what happened to Alan. Mm. There's...
Which definitely, actually, it wouldn't even feel tonally out of place, because even Alan Wake had constant, like, chapter flashback reminders of what happened.
Exactly. I don't feel... You will... That will be a question for people, because obviously this also combines elements of Control in, because the Remedy are doing their connected universe. If you haven't played Alan Wake and Control, you can still enjoy this game a lot. Mm. You will get what's going on. You won't be completely confused if you are, but you will gain so much more if you're a big fan of, like, Alan Wake and Control, like I am. Like, every little detail, like, oh, that's, you know, fun little nugget and stuff like that. Like, or you'll just see, like, flashes. This game, lots of flash frame of just things. You're just like, oh, that's, you know, that's a character for Control. What's that?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I was just going to go back to that whole anticipation thing. So the whole core of Alan Wake's gameplay is you're going around these buildings in New York, and his enemies are a bit different to the ones that Saga faces, in as much as you can tell an enemy in Saga's world, because she's living in our world, it's kind of just... they look a bit zombie-like, they're covered in shadow. You can tell they're enemy. Whereas pretty much every other person in the dark place isn't really there. They're just like a black shadow that are walking around the streets. And 9 out of 10 of those shadows will just let you walk past and nothing will happen. But there's slight little tells, and sometimes you can tell, sometimes you don't. They'll just jump out at you and attack you. So you're never sure really what an enemy is and what isn't. And it's that constant state of, like, unease, and, like, you can go like 10 minutes walking through, nothing will hurt you, and you're just, like, wasting, like, torch battery, like, shining on all of these enemies just because you're scared. Or you can be confident and just walk through and wait for them and try and time a dodge out of the way when they come for you.
Do you ever have, like, the sort of resource management survival horror thing in the back of your head, or do you always feel like you were near enough
There were a couple of times when I ran out of torch batteries. Luckily, I had a flare that got me out of danger.
Okay.
But yeah, you can't be bullet heavy. Like, never have I had more than, like, I don't know, 20 spare, like, pistol bullets. And, like,
okay.
I'm always running out of shotgun shells and stuff like that. Like, it's... And they've even got a similar inventory system to Resident Evil. So you've got the squares, you can only carry so much at one time. So, like, I've had to store my crossbow away because I just don't have room for it at the moment. I have to find some upgrades. Like,
it's
just kind of, like I said, nailed every aspect of what great survival horror games are. But, like I said, made it their own. It never feels a ripoff at any point.
Mm.
I am in love with this game. I haven't quite finished it yet, but, like, I can't see what could possibly make me not love it. The way this story's going, it's going a way I thought it would go, but there's still obvious, like, I could never guess what was going to happen in this game. Did any of you watch the launch trailer or the section of gameplay they showed last night at the Xbox showcase?
I've been
showcase?
Missing Didn't out entirely it. Just because no. I don't want spoilers.
They showed a section, I won't say, that kind of takes place... What can I say? It takes place at, like, a nursing home, and there is that.
That already sounds awful.
Yeah. It's just
horrific old people.
I don't want to spoil this for anyone. This game is so good. It delivers on everything I thought it would be, and yeah, if it wasn't like any what a year for games. Like, if it wasn't for, like, Baldur's Gate and
how are we doing this? How is there like four of the best games ever?
I think
made
Baldur's
coming
Gate
out this
is still.
Year?
Baldur's Gate has, like, my head of, like, this is obviously the best game of the year. It's a phenomenal achievement. My heart tells me maybe, you know, my heart wants to say Alan Wake, but I couldn't do it. I think Alan Wake 2, definitely I prefer it to Zelda, anyway. Like, completely different games. I don't know how you can compare Alan Wake 2 to Zelda, but we have to, because that's how Game of the Year works.
It's like how people are saying, you know, comparing Tears of the Kingdom to Baldur's Gate 3, you know, in terms of, like, that Game of the Year spot. And For me, at least, you know, just going off topic a little bit, like, Baldur's Gate 3 is an entirely new experience, while Tears of the Kingdom offers new elements, but, you know, isn't. Mm. It still feels familiar, but Alan Wake 2 is sounding like a wholly fresh survival horror experience, which is what I've been wanting for a while, because, you know, every single Resident Evil.
Great new survival horror that wasn't called Resident Evil.
Mm, yeah, it'd be tough to say.
Alien Isolation?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe I can't really think of one. Probably, to be honest.
What, that's is that 10 years old? Is that 2013? Was that a little bit later?
I think it's around that time. Yeah, to be fair,
2015 maybe. Like, yeah, it's just, and I'm not traditionally a massive horror game fan. Like, yeah. I played the big famous one. I don't delve deep into horror, but this game, I'm just in love with this game, and I think I'm more just in love with Remedy as a studio. Again, I think it's the weirdness, and the David Lynch nature of all that brings me in, because it is just, they kind of are the closest, I think, those and Rockstar, the closest we get to basically cinematic games, and that's what I look for most of the time when I'm playing a game. And yeah, just utterly fantastic, really. IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com if you're playing Alan Wake 2.
It'll be out by the time this episode comes out, I think. So
let us know what you think. You might have finished it. It's quite a lengthy game, and that was my one worry when I went into it. I'm about 14 hours in, I think, and I've still got a little bit way to go. I think Tristan, our reviewer, said it took 17 hours for him. So it's quite long for a survival horror game, but it does keep it up. I was worried if there's one thing that Remedy haven't done throughout their history of their games, it's kind of develop gameplay and keep it all the way going to the end. The stories have always been solid, I think, but like, you're kind of like, okay, I'm kind of done with this gameplay now. I was never quite bored of it, and I think it's because they use the combat so sparingly, and the puzzles are always unique as well. They're always that one step above simple, where I'm like, I actually had to properly think about this, but never frustrated.
I thought it was really interesting at the end of the first Alan Wake, like just suddenly introducing that light switch mechanic, like basically within the last like hour, and then it gets rid of it. Like, I thought that like deciding to introduce a mechanic basically when the game's ending was really cool. Like, it really maybe the best part of it, actually, and you don't get it for the majority of the game. Is there anything like that you've experienced? Actually, no, I don't want to know. No,
yeah, don't tell me the way.
It's just more they just have a great use of location and like reusing locations and just clever ways to twist reality. I can't sing this game's praise enough, but I don't want to also, a lot of the things I talk about would be spoilers, but it's just, I hope people play this game. I hope it sells well, because Remedy historically, apart from the original Max Payne's, did pretty well, but like, they're always like kind of, you know, critical darlings, you know, kind of like, let's face it, they're kind of like pretentious art kid games, but that's why I like them. But
this might be the one.
Exactly. I hope so. People love horror. Give it a go.
Well,
Five Nights at Freddy's is another horror game.
Like,
it's another horror
game. This
is really
what I was not anticipating. I was like listening to the highs of that and just imagining the roller coaster now about to take a really deep dive into just shit.
Five Nights at Freddy's is a long-running video game series now, isn't it? They've got a couple of games under that, haven't they?
I mean, I think there's at least over 10.
Is there over 10? I thought there was like 3 or 4.
Including like DLCs and stuff like that.
It's been going on since like 2014. It is a long-standing series.
My partner's a really big fan of the series, and I saw a comment from somebody the other day that was like, Five Nights at Freddy's has been like something that I've really loved for the last 15 years. And then everybody has replied and gone like, it's only been 7 years. Like, what are you talking about?
Anyway, they've already made a film of it, haven't they? They've only got to make a Five Nights at Freddy's film. Matt, you've got tickets to see this tonight as we're recording. You must be
tonight. So
excited for this.
You know what? I'm going to do exactly what I did with Mithrigan, and I'm going to go to like a quite bad movie theater. I'm going to drink a bottle of wine, and I'm going to like shout really heavily. The quality of the movie is like incidental to my level of enjoyment.
It's only Thursday. Are you in tomorrow?
Yeah.
It's a light bottle of wine.
Jesse, you've already seen this film. Why should Matt be so excited?
I mean, I will say, so I went to a screening of it like a couple of days ago, and it was, I mean, typically with these screenings, it's usually packed, right? Especially for people who might be seeing it early, whether they're influencers or reviewers or whoever, right? Family and friends, usually they are packed. This time, I think there was like 16 people at first, and like maybe a minute before the film started, 15 extra people appeared. So it was already...
Maybe people were just too scared. They thought, this film was going to be too scary. I'm staying at home.
I would say this is the first time I've gone to a screen and where it was sort of like a half mix of people in cosplay and then just other people who I think were maybe 30 years too late to getting around to experiencing anything Five Nights. But in case you don't
know... We gave this a 4 out of 10, by the way.
Yeah, we gave it a 4 out of 10.
We should say at this point, roundly considered a poor film.
It's...
But you loved it, didn't you?
I really didn't, man. I think my problem is like, you know, Matt, you mentioned Mothregan, right? And that is a goofy...
It's just called Megan.
No, we like to say Mothregan. It's a good name. But that is like, I think that's what? I think that's a 12 as well or something. It's like, it's not like an 18 R-rated
film. I say 12 out of 10. Like, that's a high rating.
I give it that. It's a good
but
movie.
What I'm saying is, it's like, it is another
Blumhouse
film. It's a
slasher without much, like, you know, actual gore in it.
Yeah,
like,
it's goofy and dumb, but it still has some, like, you know, spooky and just... fucked up bits in it that you can still enjoy even if it's not an 18. Five Nights is just, it is so melancholic and just boring.
What? How have they made a melancholic Five Nights at Freddy's?
Let me explain. So like everyone and their nan knows what Five Nights is, but in case you don't, it's all about a night watchman who's tasked with looking after like an abandoned children's pizzeria, and the pizzeria is populated with, you know, dodgy animatronic mascots who just so happen to harbor the soul of dead children in them. But, you know, we'll get onto that afterwards. With the Five Nights film, and this is where the melancholy sort of begins, you've got Josh Hutcherson, who plays a character called Mike. He's the lead, and you'll probably know him as, Peter?
The Hunger Games.
Yeah. And then you've got, I think, Elizabeth Lail. She co-stars, and she's from the Netflix show You, season one. And then you've got Matthew Lillard, you know, fucking Shaggy. He's also in the film. Yeah.
Well, also Scream is probably where they were drawing the horror.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get into spoilers, but the way they use him isn't too far as to what happens in Scream, and it's so fucking aggravating. But beyond that, the melancholy is surrounded with Mike's character, who is sort of this down and out dude who can't like handle any particular job. He just got kicked out of like a security job in a mall because he thought some child was getting kidnapped, and then he ended up like punching a parent or something. But the reason why that caught him out so badly is because when he was a kid, he was on a holiday with his parents and his little brother got kidnapped, right? So that's already fucked him up. And now he's looking after his little sister. He's got a house he's about to lose. He can't take on any particular job until Matthew Lillard, Shaggy, offers him one particular job. But it seems like they both have a history
about
together.
This one scoop.
Yeah, I know. But it looks like Mike and I can't remember fucking Lillard's character's name. We'll just call him Mike and Shaggy. Shaggy sort of already knows who Mike is, but already just sends him off to do a couple of nights, five nights specifically, at Freddy's pizzeria. Now, the problem is that throughout the film, it's constantly going back and forth between like Mike's just depressing ass childhood and him dealing with his little sister and trying to raise her, all while dealing with the mystery of, you know, Freddy's pizzeria. And it's just, you've got this subplot with dealing with like his aunt who wants to take his sister away from him and stuff. You're dealing with these ghost children who sporadically appear throughout the film. And then you're dealing with sometimes creepy moments regarding the animatronics, but then
is any of this like lore? Like, is this like background in any of the games?
Yes,
a lot of this is in there. Yeah,
yeah. So okay. they've taken like highlights from, I think, like maybe the first three games, and have sort of just crunched it, whilst also adding on top Mike's further developed story that has never really been established.
This is the whole problem with this film. I'm trying to work out who it's for. Because, like, isn't Five Nights at Freddy's kind of... I always thought, maybe I'm wrong, isn't it like the horror game for kids, basically? Like, kids love to be scared by these animatronics.
I mean,
But they can't go and watch this. Would they get anything out of this film if they're mainly centering on family?
It's not scary. It's not gory. It's got, like, a little bit of blood here and there and some awful jump scares that are just thrown in for no reason. But I think that's the initial problem with Five Nights, is that despite having near enough 10 games, and it's sort of like a Resident Evil problem, right? Where you do have a lot of story, you do have a lot of lore. Does that necessarily mean you're going to get a good film? No, because like most of the film is filled with just different references and Easter eggs, even to the point where they have a cameo from one particular YouTuber, which is just so fucking awful.
No.
And I really want to say it here. I don't think it's been revealed.
I don't think anyone is going to care.
It's been revealed that they're in there.
Well, it's got MatPat from Game Theory in it, and he's like the guy who's serving them food in a diner, and he ends up waffling on about how lunch is the most important meal, but then he just ends up saying, "But that's just a theory."
And then six people
in the cinema laughed out loud at that, and I was like, "Fuck me, I want to leave." And you know what's worse? A few people in the screening actually left halfway through as well. That, you don't see that on screen like that.
That's never
too scary for
a screening.
Too scary for yeah.
But it's just it's weird that the film almost focuses too much on Mike, but then also has this weird thing where actually the animatronics aren't evil. They're not actually bad because, you know, they have the soul of these dead children, and he's trying to wrap his head around his brother getting abducted while he was a kid, whilst also trying to save these children who are trapped in these animatronics. But also the animatronics are deadly and they do kill people in the film, but in the most tame way possible. And like the one good thing about Five Nights is that the actual animatronics, the actual suits, they do look fantastic. Like, they are practical.
It's actually the,
they've
Jim
actually
Henson.
Made them. That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah,
Jim,
yeah.
Okay, Jim cool. Henson Company produced them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they look great, but it's, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, it is a PG-13 horror film where I think the only enjoyment you're going to get out of it is if you have obliterated every single Five Nights game. You've watched, you know, 15 hours of lore retrospectives in your spare time, because if you're going into this film wanting scares or wanting tension or wanting to feel anxious as you're watching something and someone's going down a hallway, you're just not going to be getting that because the film just isn't.
Are you still
scary.
Looking forward to it, Matt? Are you still?
So, yeah, I think the fact that I'm like going with my partner, who's a really yeah, big yeah. like FNAF head.
Fred head.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We'll probably, I can imagine like how sore the bruise on my arm is going to be tomorrow from being elbowed constantly. Like, hey, it's that.
The biggest crime is that it's just so boring. It's just dealing with Mike's fucking sad little depressive episode whilst you really want to be looking at the cool animatronics that they've built. You almost want something like Don't Breathe, and Don't Breathe was like a 15, which that's what Five Nights is in the UK. And, you know, that's a premise where people are locked in within this location, which you sort of want with Five Nights, but you're not really getting.
It just maybe it should never have been a film. Maybe it should be a video game. It'd be a cool like theme park ride.
It's been 10 something. Years in the making. This wow. film,
yeah,
which
so that
is
was
insane.
Gonna be my point as well, that like the kids that would have watched this when it was coming out are probably old enough to go see it now. Like, it's actually kind of interesting timing.
I just yeah, it's I just mean. It's just bizarre.
I never had any interest in it anyway, so at least I'm not missing out on a masterpiece, I guess.
You're really not.
No, I imagine Alan Wake 2 is probably better, but I don't know that.
We'll find out next week. So. I might have played both.
Exactly. I'd love it if Matt comes in tomorrow. He's like 10 out of 10.
Yeah, yeah. Best movie I've ever seen.
I did have that worry that like me and my partner left the screen and were like, because we hated the film. And I always have that worry in my head where it's just like, do other people really like this film? Am I the one who's just fundamentally
wrong? Why is it a worry?
It's just more like picking up on just how it fails as a film and then just seeing.
I mean, yeah, your hunch is normally right, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
most people, you know, you can normally tell if something's good or bad or whether it's you didn't like it or not. Those yeah. are two different things, I think.
No, that is fair.
Like, if you walk outside going, try and actually think of things to appreciate, then that's where the problem lies. But the animatronics sound cool. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm intrigued to see if this makes a lot of money or not, because it's the sort of thing that maybe a few years ago would have said, oh, it'll make millions at least, but I don't know if it will. I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe the demand's not there. There's only like one showing at the cinema near me per day as well, so they're not clearly got that
I mean,
much confidence.
The review embargo was near enough the next day after the film like
yeah
came
that's
out,
how
so.
A lot of screens are, to be fair.
Yeah,
I still haven't, I need to find time to see Killers of the Flower Moon, which is probably probably better than Five Nights at Freddy's, but
I could be wrong. I could be entirely
out,
wrong
really?
I know. Like I briefly mentioned earlier, there was a little Xbox presentation, kind of like their first little, sort of like a Nintendo Direct, I guess, last night. And they showed a few trailers, a couple of little surprises in there. I didn't expect to see a first gameplay look at Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater Remake. I won't call it Delta, it sounds stupid. But a weird trailer. It was kind of less of a trailer, more of like a tech showcase. It's yeah. like, here's our engine, which
it works.
It's a weird... Like, it looked, I suppose it looked good. I'm still confused about this game because it looks good. They showed the most dull sections of this game. Like, they did not make it look an exciting game. It's like, here he is walking slowly and here he is climbing. It's like, if you're going to show off, like show me the Shaggerhood or show me.
Yeah. Oh, they've got to like, save that. They've got to have
the
whole
sorrow.
Marketing
show me something that screams snake here. I mean, not just snake crouching in grass.
They showed you a little vulture doing a bird.
Yeah, they did.
That was pretty good.
I think my problem is that I know visually and tech wise it looks brilliant, but like stylistically, I feel like it's missing what the original MGS3 has in just terms of like the color tone and just the overall.
I know what you mean. It looks almost too clean.
Like it doesn't have that almost, you know, Bond-esque feeling to it.
This was just a tech show because it wasn't a fully like edited trailer, which I still don't know why they decided to go this way. But maybe they just wanted to show people, look, it is real. Please be excited.
It's so one to one at the moment as well, which also brings into question like, because MGS3, it can be finished in like 4 or 5 hours, really. Like once you've gotten through it. Like it's not really
if
that
you know all the tricks. Yeah,
I don't think it's an entirely difficult game, and yeah, that obviously comes from perspective of blasting through. But the environments are pretty small once you actually think about them, and everything I've seen in this, well, I don't know, Unreal Engine 5 tech demo near enough. Like it is pretty one to one with just the actual game, and it doesn't look like anything's been expanded.
I think that's what I would. To be fair, I'd argue that's what I'd want, because without Kojima working on it, I don't want them to muck with it. At least if you're not going to involve him, at least just respect him and put in everything he had in there. But we still don't know. That's why I wanted to see some of the weirder stuff or some of the even some dialogue or just one of the bosses to go, okay, they've got the feel of that right.
I wanted to see him wear a head that had an alligator on top of it, right?
But we're like, I know we're probably a ways off in this game, and they just wanted to remind people it's coming because the collection's out now. But
yeah.
I don't know. It just still feels weird to me that they're doing this without Kojima involved.
It's a weird thing to really need to see, but the UI is so important. Are you going to have a camo meter at the top all the time? Right? Is that the sort of thing that's actually going to be surfaced?
How are they going to do the video calls, stuff that?
Yeah.
That's what I think will the real true test this game is. Do they still have that unique Metal Gear tone and feel and kind of oddness? A bit like Remedy to an extent, that kind of constant mix of tension and just weirdness that you get with Kojima as well. I wasn't blown away. They were Unreal 5. I thought, oh, okay, this could look unbelievable. I was it looked good. It didn't look astonishing. That alligator looked fine. I don't know.
I think just on a technical level, it looks great, but stylistically, it's missing those, visual choices that actual MGS3 had. Mm-hmm. And maybe, that's going to get implemented because, it's probably fucking ages away at this point. But yeah it's probably for
grumpy older people like me who have played this game before and they know it was I was looking for something to excite me about it, whereas this is kind of just what I thought it would be. And if you're someone who's never played that game before, if you're a younger person or someone who's never played Metal Gear 3 before, and you look at that, you go, oh wow, that looks exciting.
It reminds me of those next gen videos on YouTube where it's here's Ocarina of Time remade in Unreal Engine. And it's got the beautiful flowing grass and the textures look good, but there's no style.
All the comments under those videos are always Nintendo, hire this man.
Yeah, I was just you don't want this. I guarantee it, man.
But still, no, I want to still stay open-minded because I do want to play this game. It is one of the best games ever made.
Yeah, 100%.
It's
the most playable of all of the series as well, though. I keep coming back to why remake this one? Why not remake 4, the one that's actually notoriously...
I think they just want to do it chronologically, don't they? They'll do it eventually, but
it's mad. One of the comments in front of me right now says the trailer looks like one of those. Here is Ocarina of Time in Unreal Engine. Nintendo, hire this man. Doesn't have the atmosphere or the style, or
I don't know. I feel like they're maybe caught in between a rock and a hard place, and I'm also caught in my mind of what do I really want? Because I want an even longer
ladder.
Exactly. I want something new and exciting, but I also don't want them to change anything because Kojima got it right. It's I don't want them to muck that bit up and then by being ambitious. I don't know. If it is just Metal Gear and if it's the exact same game and it looks nice, that looks nice, then I'll probably be happy. But I've not seen anything yet that screams they've got the tone they've nailed that tone. But we'll see. We haven't really heard the music. We haven't seen proper gameplay. Maybe we're being overly harsh on it there, but I don't know. Just want to keep an eye on because we still, again, don't really know who's making this game. It's That's a bizarre true. Thing. One game, though, that just looks downright incredible. Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, coming January, February.
I can't believe that the game of the year is coming out in January. just setting it up for the rest of the 12 months.
Getting so excited for this. If you don't know what it is the sequel to Yakuza Like a Dragon, which was the first turn-based Yakuza game, but it's now, that series is now called Like a Dragon, so this is Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. I've actually just coincidentally even, that's the right word, been playing a ton of Yakuza Like a Dragon the last week or two, just because I wanted something to play that wasn't a work game I could just enjoy for fun, and there aren't like series that are much more fun to just dive in and out of than Yakuza. And God, I forgot how much I was only like 10 to 12 hours in when I stopped playing it when it first came out, but I was loving it. It was just, I think, other games got in the way.
Yeah. That's when it really picks up too. You're in the sweet spot right now.
Oh, and yeah, I've put in another, 15 hours over the past couple of weeks, and it's just so, so, so good. And I think we were talking about Matt the other day, I did the whole management sim thing just in 2 days. Just like, it's all I did. I ignored the main story. It's like, I'm going to have the best share price in totally. Yokohama.
And I'm going to run a sweet shop and then suddenly I'm running an international conglomerate.
And that's where we jump into the new trailer we saw last night, which introduces Dondoko Island, which, if you don't know, Infinite Wealth is set in Hawaii, right? Or is it a fictional island? It is Hawaii. And Dondoko Island looks like their big, you say mini game, it looks like a whole another game.
It's a
within
maxi game.
within this new one. And they've basically put Animal Crossing in Yakuza.
We're not overstating this for what it's worth.
Yeah,
really,
I haven't watched that trailer. So I don't know how extensive this is.
It is Animal Crossing. It's probably maybe like 30 hours of just this minimum.
And it looks like you get to this island by riding a dolphin. Mm-hmm. They just don't give a shit, do they?
No. I love that Yakuza as a series is tonally some of the most serious and po-faced, and some of the, like, it's a fucking video game, you know?
Yeah. They're just like, is it Yakuza 0 that's like, when you drill down, it's just a 50-hour story about a land dispute? Is
Absolutely.
That 0?
Yeah.
It's just so funny that, like, I'm just rewatching through the trailer now, like, there's also battles on this island. There's mascots.
The mascots are actually like famous children's Japanese characters I discovered by researching this earlier today. And they've been in a Thomas the Tank Engine episode from the 90s.
Incredible.
Oh, wow.
I've just paused it on a frame here where there seems to be a man wearing a burger hat who's getting, you can rub his belly to keep him happy.
That sounds about right for Yakuza, to be fair, from the games I've finished.
There's fishing. I'm just going to lose so much time to this. You've just built a whole island settlement, like a resort. It's just going to be amazing. I hope I have time to play this game.
I'm going to make time. What's this whole job for if I can't just play Yakuza for it?
Well, when is... I'm just double checking it. I think it is January.
It is
February,
January,
isn't?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
We've got Man Who Erased His Name beforehand. This year.
See, that's like... I always liked Yakuza and the vibe, but I never really loved their action combat, so I always bounced off a bit. But it's the turn-based combat I love so much because they've basically turned it into Persona, right? So I'm going to do that. I'm going to play this game for a lot of time. I just forgot how to speak because I was getting distracted by what I was watching. I will play this for a lot of time. And just Kasuga is just such a good character as well, isn't he? So, yep. Can't wait for that one. And the last one we'll talk about. Did anyone else watch the Still Wakes the Deep trailer?
I did. Check it out.
No. Yeah.
The new game from the Chinese Room, who did Dear Esther and Everyone's Gone to the Rapture. Two games I kind of appreciate, but don't really love all too much, if I'm perfectly honest. I like Dear Esther a bit, to be fair. But Everyone's Gone to the Rapture, I thought I'd really like, but I was utterly bored. But there we go. This one is definitely more of a horror game from the tone of it, the trailer. And I've never seen a game that screams respect the sea more than this game does. To be fair, Alan Wake 2, tons of water. So many times I've read notes and I thought it was going to say respect the sea, but they kind of go away from that and talk about lakes and oceans much more than seas. But Still Wakes the Deep, it's like another just narrative game. Like, I don't want to... It's a walking sim, you know. It doesn't look like there's going to be combat or puzzles necessarily. It's going to tell a horror story.
But there are some elements of mild peril.
Yes, and some weird, almost supernatural things seem to be going on in this oil rig. I will say it looks like a game I might enjoy, apart from when they showed sections that are just like very claustrophobic of going through small underwater tunnels. And that's my own personal idea of hell, is like being in a tight little tunnel filled with water and you have to swim to the other end of it. Like that sounds like hell on earth.
This is why you had to drop out of marine training, wasn't
exactly
it?
I was so close to jetting off
the Royal Commandos and shit.
Exactly. But there was always, I always remember, I've probably said this on the podcast before, remember Fort Boyard?
Remember Fort Boyard? Oh,
do you not, Jesse, are you too young for Fort Boyard?
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, it was like the Crystal Maze, but on a French sea fort.
That sounds sick.
And it had Dirty Den from EastEnders and Melinda Messenger running around with two small people, which probably in hindsight is not on. And there was these tigers that
I remember the tigers very vividly. Yeah. Yeah.
I always remember Dirty Den just going, Jacques, the door, to one of the people to open the door.
Oh, this is 1998. I definitely missed.
It was kind of a slightly more extreme version of Crystal Maze. It'd be much more like rock climbing and diving off into the sea and stuff like that. But there was always one that was like, they'd open a hatch and you'd have to like crawl down into it. And it was a real like little tight tunnel you had to swim through. And I was like, that you would never, ever get me to do that in a million years. So this kind of looks like, this looks like Fort Boyard tunnel the game, but with psychological demons. So I'll probably hate it, but it might be good.
They're going to ask you for that quote for the ad now.
Yeah. There we go. But yeah, it kind of, yeah, it looks interesting. Check it out. Why not? The Endless Search. Let's just get into it. We've been sent in another new theme song from a familiar name. It's from CJ from Code Marla, who are the authors of the Endless Search theme that has been under sort of debate recently, which I think is unfair. But here we go. We've landed in this little mess. CJ says, the new metal version is taking a while to finish as the band has been busy with preparing for gigs. But I have made this little lo-fi version after one of you mentioned that. Maybe with this version, that one listener's wife will let him listen at night again. We can only hope. It's very different to the garage one, but I kept some of the lyrics from the original for flavour. It might be a little long, but lo-fi is a much slower tempo than garage, so that's a byproduct. I played all the instruments on this one myself, with the exception of vocals provided by Code Marla singer Sonia. And the trumpet has come all the way from Canada by lo-fi artist Fred Patchy.
This rules.
I was hoping his name was just Fred. That would be sick.
Well, we can just call him Fred if you want. Anyway, CJ says, we hope you like it. Let's listen and see if people do like it.
That is amazing.
That's really, really good.
I like it. It reminds me, actually, again, Alan Wake 2. Each chapter of Alan Wake 2 kind of ends with a song that just plays. You can either skip a song or you can do what I do and listen to the songs. And kind of one of them has like a lo-fi sort of edge, a bit like that. So it wouldn't be too out of place in Alan Wake 2. So
did they manage to get David Bowie again?
No, I think they're all Finnish artists this time, ooh, I believe. So not that their careers are done. They're just from Finland. but there we go. The Endless Search. We're going to play a game. Because that's right. What the Endless Search is. Ultimately, it's not just listening to the theme song. It is playing a game. And this one has been sent in from Christopher Wakeling, who I've just tweaked the game slightly, Chris. But, you know, it's the essence of it. So here we go. It says, hi, IGN UK crew. Long time, a second time. I've just had an idea for an Endless Search, which I don't think you've played before, and I'm pretty sure I've not stolen from anywhere else. The first player is given a letter from the alphabet. They then have to think of both the highest and lowest rated game, beginning with that letter, according to Metacritic. The second player then has their guess, and you get points. Basically, you get a point. I'm going to have to re-explain this. You get a point for whoever has the largest disparity between their two numbers. So okay, who can so think the of the highest high and the lowest? Yeah, so say someone said 90, someone said 60. You got 30, someone got 32. The person who got the disparity of 32 will get the point.
Right.
And we're going to do that three times because you have to think of two per one. So we'll keep it small. Okay. I haven't just done games. And I've actually changed it. So yeah, I'm just going to pick the letters and you just get on with it. Okay. Oh, and Chris has a side question before we start the game. Side question, if you can only play games starting with a particular letter from the with a particular letter of the alphabet for the rest of your lives, which letter would you choose?
M is a pretty good one.
What games have you got there?
Metal Gear Solid, you get Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm. I don't get Mario, that's Super Mario. So.
Well, you could have the original. Mario and Sonic at the Olympics.
I'd go for G, because then I get all the God of Wars, I get all the Grand Theft Autos.
Mm.
You could be the only one in the world playing Guilty Gear. You get really good at it.
Exactly. Gary's mod.
Oh yeah, you could mod like Half-Life 2 back into Gary's mod, so you can play it.
Exactly. Go on, Jesse. Just say a letter, and that's what you got.
I mean, it's R.
For Resident, you're just gonna play Resident.
Well, it's Resident Evil, Red Dead, and also Roblox. And because people make new games for Roblox like every fucking day,
that's true.
I should be sorted.
Matt,
for
you
life.
Got Minecraft as well, actually.
So oh, true.
Yeah. I should have thought this through. Because all I need actually is Red Dead, isn't it? So I should just take it on.
Listeners. UK underscore IGN feedback for is that the email?
IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com.
What's the one letter?
What's the best gaming letter of the alphabet?
X.
There we go. Now let's play the game, if you can remember how that was played. So I'm actually going to do this. So like, I'm going to say Matt gets to go first. I want Matt, you to pick your highest, and then Jesse would go for your highest. Then we go for Matt's lowest and Jesse's lowest. That's how we're going to play it. And then whoever has the biggest gap between those gets the point.
Cool.
So I'm going to say a game starting with C. So the highest scoring game you can think beginning with C.
Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare.
Oh, it's a good start. I need one.
My highest.
Yeah.
Modern Warfare 2.
Okay.
That has to be higher than Call of Duty 4. It must be.
Okay. Well, I can tell you now they're both at a 94. So it's basically a playoff now too. You can get the lowest between these two. So, Matt, I need a low game starting with C.
It's not going to be low enough, but it's the only one I can think of. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time.
Crash Bandicoot 4. Jesse.
Call of Juarez, the Cartel, damn. Which is dog shit.
You don't even have to look this up, mate.
I don't, but I do because I need, you never know what madness can occur. So yeah, Crash Bandicoot 4 is an 85. People really liked it, apparently. So there you go. So, a difference of 9. Jesse, Call of Juarez, The Cartel, 47 on Metacritic. So
I've never finished a Crash game before.
They are hard. You can get through it one day, don't worry. But you do only get 1 point despite that massive difference there.
That's fine.
So that's fine. And we're going to mix it up. For the second one, we're going to do films. I'm going to do a film, and Jesse, you get to go first this time. I want your highest scoring one you can think of a film that begins with M.
I swear this is a film and I could be just making it. Is it Master and Commander? Is that what it's called?
Master and Commander is a very good
movie. Good movie.
Yeah. Jesus.
By the way, on all these, as normal, like quiz rules, the doesn't count. So you could do something and, you know, that's not always a T.
Can I have Megamind?
You can have Megamind as your high. Sick. There you go.
Yeah. That's a great
That's an interesting choice. Do I give you the score? Is it more interesting if I save them for the end, or do I just do the high ones now?
I think at the end. That'd be fun.
Okay, I'm just going to open two more tabs. Jesse, what's your low choice for
the remake of Mulan?
Oh, the live-action Mulan.
Yes, the live-action.
God, that's really good.
Okay.
Can I have Multiplicity starring Michael Keaton?
What? What's it called?
You're going to make it Multiplicity.
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 Oh, right.
So,
I've never heard of that film.
Master and Commander, : The Far Side of the World. I didn't need the full title, it's fine. Because I think they were going to turn us into a franchise, but no one wanted more, and I don't know why. Respect. the sea.
I've never even watched the film. I've just heard it's good.
Oh, it's so good. 81 on Metacritic.
Okay.
Under Mulan? You'd say?
I would say, yeah, that should be at least an 85, 86.
How does Mega Mulan compare?
Is a 66. Okay. So that's 15, a difference of 15. So you need more than 15, Matt. That's how this works. Megamind, only a 63.
Oh, no.
I just love all the films you could have picked. Me, Myself, and Irene
would have been my bad film choice.
Multiplicity, which wasn't a film I think we'd be talking about today. A 53, so at least it was lower, but only an 8 lower. Okay. So, Jesse, you do win. So Jesse's won the game, but we'll do the third one for fun. We'll go back to games. Let's do, and Matt, you get to go first, a good game. I want a good game that begins with P.
Portal 2.
I thought you said Portal 2,
and I was like, what game is that?
Jesse, what's yours? And if you, I'm going to make a rule, you can't pick from the same series anymore, so you can't just say Portal.
Let's go with the Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time.
Ooh, okay. A low one, Matt.
Ooh. Oh, I don't have one locked. Oh, no.
Ooh.
I think... Oh, Pokemon Cafe.
Pokemon Cafe.
If it
Jesse,
has a
score.
You
cannot pick a Pokemon game. No. Pokemon Cafe Mix, is that what you're...
I think so, but does it have a score? Well,
it has a score.
Okay, cool.
What do you do in that game?
You, like, mix around little Pokemons. You try and make lattes out of them.
Oh. Think of a bad P game.
Perfect Dark Zero.
Because
it's the only one I think people dislike.
Okay. I think you might be incorrect, but there we go.
Fuck.
Portal 2. 95 on Metacritic. Mm. That's a good game, isn't
it? He's got this.
Pokemon Cafe Mix, a 64. So that's a difference of 31. That's big.
That's higher than I thought it would be. There's not much to it.
Prince of Persia Sands of Time. That's a big 92. I didn't know it was that high on Metacritic. 92. Unfortunately, Jesse, Perfect Dark Zero still has an 81.
I remember people disliking that for some reason.
Maybe it just wasn't as good. I'm not a
Yeah, probably just fan. Wasn't as good as the original, I guess.
Although Perfect Dark, the original, has a 79, so apparently Perfect Dark Zero was better. Wow. What do I know? But there we go. That does mean that you clawed one back there, Matt. So it finished 2-1 to Jesse. Fun little game there. Thank you.
That was pretty good.
Chris.
You should have somehow included a Five Nights game in that.
Well, maybe. I think we've talked enough about Five Nights of Freddy's.
I like this one because it's technically mathematically solvable. You could actually have the correct answer every time if you studied.
Exactly. Right. IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. That's where you can send in your endless search themes, your endless search suggestions, but also any old feedback, whether you want to talk about crisps or crumpets or horror or Alan Wake or, I don't know, anything really. Ask us anything. We might not answer it, but we might read it. So there you go. Matt, what have we got first up?
I've got this lovely message from Adam Clayton, who says, "Hi, folks, long-time listener, and I've been listening to lots of old episodes recently to relax me as I come up to my wedding this weekend. Ooh. I was wondering which gaming character you'd pick as your best man or maid of honour. Personally, I would pick Siegward from Dark Souls 3. He gives you the toast emote and a plentiful supply of Siegbrow, so you know he's always down a party. Thank you for all you do. Respect the sea and lots of love to my new wife, Ellie."
Congratulations.
Aww, yeah, congratulations.
I hope he turns up for you. I've had a little think about this. I did have an idea, but then we talked about Yakuza and I was like, well, Ichiban Kasuga from
this was going to be Dragon my choice.
Oh, but, you can have him. Go on.
No, but I was thinking more about Kazuma Kiryu because, you know, he's just... Yeah, he's just a very supportive young man.
He can do some karaoke. All of them can do karaoke, to be fair, can't they?
I'm going to Japan soon, and you'd best believe that I'm going to do Bakamitai at karaoke. I will be supplying us a video of this for the IGN Amazing. UK Twitter feed.
I thought, you know, that would be the fun option, but then my original one was, you know what? If I want an earnest soul who can tell a tearjerker of a story, I'm going to go for... Arthur Morgan.
I was considering him as well.
Just the voice and, you know, some of the... He may not be the most the, you know, the most literate writer in the world, but some of the notes he writes down in his notebook and stuff like that, or they're tearjerkers.
What stage of his life do you want him to appear?
Oh, near the end.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. But like, no, like when he's realized, not when he's in too ill health, but when he's realizing what life is all about, so he could bring that sort of, you know, sense of weight to proceedings.
Okay, but he can't, not at the stage where he can cough on someone and...
No. He can wear a mask as well.
That's fair.
Yeah. That'd be a fun one, I think.
Mm.
I think that'd probably be it. Who are you thinking, Jess? You got anyone?
I wouldn't mind like
Leon
like,
Kennedy, probably.
No, I wanted something sort of adorable, like Tom Nook from Animal Crossing. Just
Who wants Tom Nook at their wedding?
He doesn't need to say anything. I just want to hear him make little dumb sounds and just, you know, mumble around and shit.
So what is Tom Nook gonna do at a wedding?
Just charge people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I gotta get some money back from the wedding. It's expensive.
You're gonna use it to make a lot of money, basically, as well.
I mean, that sounds pretty good. I wasn't even considering that. I just thought he's quite sort of adorable, but the money.
It'd be easier for cleaning up afterwards as well, because he's gonna turn all the chairs into leaves. Yeah.
Do you know who I wouldn't have? Alan Wake. He'd just stand there, right, and be like, "And the wedding was drenched in blood." And I was like, "No, Alan, no, we don't need this. We don't want this here." But yeah, that wouldn't be a fun one. I've got an email from Luke Beardsworth, who says, "Hello, IGN UK podcast, semi long-time listener and first-time writer. On a recent episode, one listener wrote in to discuss the idea of naming a child after a video game actor. I believe the name Atreus was mentioned specifically. I'm generally of the view that a kid might not love you for that decision in 20 years' time when they're explaining for the 50th time why they're named after this horrible little brat from God of War. The only time that might be acceptable is when it is vague and non-specific enough for it to not raise eyebrows. Like if you named your child like Harrier or Harry from Disco Elysium. It doesn't work as well if you go for Aerith. That being said, I do have a dog called Atreus, who we gave a lime green harness to represent the mistletoe from both the game and The Legend of Loki. I was only able to get away with this by texting people who my partner, Ruth, and I know, confirming his name as Atreus while she drove us back from the rescue in Cumbria." Lovely little details. Yeah.
You've painted a real picture. You've got a real Alan Wake amongst us.
That was that. There was no going back. The too long don't read of that is that it's infinitely more acceptable for pets, and I encourage everyone to do the same in a similarly rogue fashion. The theme tune is class. Don't listen to the haters. Respect the scene. I think, yeah, pets are good to name after characters.
It's also a good Loki style move to do a real trick on your wife.
I'm trying to think, again. Just Ichiban, get a little dog called Ichiban.
I think that's a cute name. More like Dante.
Call him Itchy. Yeah, little Itchy. Alan, little Alan. I don't know.
Alan's such a great name for it. You ever see that cat video that's of the dog that's called Fenton that's being shouted at?
Yeah.
Classic one.
I love Fenton.
In fact, that's the sound at the end of the episode. You'll hear that.
Yeah. We don't need music when you can play Fenton. Despite Alan Wake having all this extraordinarily good music, let's just play Fenton. We'll do that. For some reason to me, a cat called Alan is funnier than a dog.
Yeah,
that'd be good. Jesse, what have you got us?
This is from, I thought I said Andy Champion, which would have been a rad name, but this is from Andy. He says, "Hi all, long time listener, second time writer. All this recent talk of demo discs and novelty snack foods had me thinking back to simpler times, and I'm asking myself, why don't games have classic button input cheat codes anymore? I know using them in games is, well, cheating, but I miss the days of throwing on infinite ammo or invincibility in a game just to mess around for a while in GTA or GoldenEye. I know a lot of modern games have multiplayer components, so those wouldn't work, but still, where's the silly fun? Love the podcast, and as always, respect the sea and grave diggers." Jesus. Yeah, don't really see cheats anymore, to be fair.
They don't. I was actually... So I recently replayed Max Payne 2. I played it on Xbox. And they don't really have... there's no cheat codes for Max Payne on Xbox. There's only the one you can do to unlock all levels. Whereas, like, on PC, like, all the inputs still work, obviously, so you can do all the infinite... You can do invincibility and health and ammo and all of that. It's weird, the console version of that.
I kind of like... Yeah. I'm sorry I have to mention this. I kind of like the way Resident Evil 4 does it. I know, I'm sorry. No, but like with the remake, you know, you're aiming to get unlockables, which give you like infinite ammo and little silly things and whatnot. I think that's a funner way of just being able to use whatever cheats you want, like it's something you can just fuck around with post, you know.
I think GTA will always have them in, right?
Oh yeah, I can't imagine GTA 6 not having cheats. That will feel like a slap in the face. I do want flying cars back for a GTA 6 cheat. Mm-hmm. So we haven't had flying cars since like San Andreas. Yeah, but that's bullshit.
They introed those to the actual game though. You can buy them in online.
Really?
Yeah, you can buy flying cars.
Oh, yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, that's a customization thing. I thought you meant like you can use the cheats in the game
somehow. No. You can actually buy them. Yeah, yeah.
Well, they need to put that in GTA 6 as a cheat, please.
There we go. What was everyone's favorite cheat from a game? IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. Is it getting your little Sims gnome out to just get loads of money so you can build a house? Because that's all I ever did in The Sims.
That is the best cheat, to be fair.
Yeah, I just built that dream house and then ended the game. Never actually played it. There we go. Another one episode, eh? Oh, we had a good time. Should we listen to Fenton? Or more specifically, Fenton's owner?
I think play Fenton right at the end, but let's do some Alan Wake music.
We'll do a little bit of Fenton going into some Alan Wake. How about that? There we go. Perfect.
Editing treat.
Amazing. Love it. Right. Have a good weekend. See ya. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Fenton!
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.